All right, listen up. This is Hoxton on Audio Boom. Get your ears working, people.
This week on Double Tap, the London Games Festival.
I am a deeply left-wing feminist woman with a degenerative disease who tried to take down a major publisher. It's a f***ing miracle to be standing here.
And the story behind the Far Cry Primal soundtrack.
Considering the biggest challenge really was, what did music sound like then? The audio team and I felt like rhythm would be a great place to start.
Hello and welcome to Double Tap. I'm Alice Taplin. This week, the gaming spotlight has been on London as the 10-day London Games Festival has taken place to showcase the creative industry in the UK. We'll be looking at the gaming BAFTAs and announcements from the festival. Also, later in the show, my chat with Jason Graves, the man behind the music on games such as Until Dawn, Tomb Raider, and, most recently, Far Cry Primal. First, a roundup of the news from producer Jamie Wareham.
Fallout 4 has won the best game at the British Academy Game Awards, but it was favourite Everybody's Gone to the Rapture that has proved that indie games are becoming a dominant force in the games industry. It took home 3 awards out of its record 10 nominations. The other big indie winner of the night was Her Story. At the London Gaming Festival this week, Culture Minister Ed Vasey called on UK gamers to vote to stay in the European Union.
One thing you might do, for example, is vote yes in the referendum to remain.
He argued it was in gamers' interests to vote to stay in because it helped the gaming industry. And Quantum Break has dropped this week to much critical acclaim, and with a few surprises. Those who pirated the game on Windows 10 will be forced to bear the shame of an eye patch on the game's time-hopping hero, Jack Joyce. And for those long-term Remedy fans out there, there's also a rather lengthy tribute to Alan Wake, which is sure to have you itching for a sequel. And in the esports news, a brand new Olympic-style esports tournament has been announced at the London Gaming Festival. The eGames initiative will see players compete for national pride and medals instead of prize money, with the first competition taking place alongside the Rio 2016 Olympic Games. And Optic Gaming has won the first stage of the North American Call of Duty World League. The team beat Rise Nation at the finals of the North American Stage 1 Finals. That win gives them a shot at qualifying for the Call of Duty Championships later in the year.
And Jamie's joined me in the studio now to tell me more about the London Gaming Festival. Let's start with those all-important BAFTAs, a big night for indie developers.
It was. I mean, sure, Fallout 4 probably quite deservedly won the best game title, but it was Everybody's Gone to the Rapture by the Brighton-based Chinese Room that stole the show. It's, of course, the apocalyptic game based in Shropshire Village, where although the start and finale are basically the same for everyone, it's actually the gameplay is decided by you as you kind of try to work out what happened. It got a record 10 nominations. It took home the Audio Achievement, the Music and the Performer Award. Of course, Dan Pinchbeck and Jess Curry were really delighted, actually, and pretty overwhelmed. In fact, it was Jess's acceptance speech that rather stole the audience's heart away last night.
I can't look at Dara because I had a dream about him last night. Involving table tennis and an indecent amount of baby oil. I am a deeply left-wing feminist woman with a degenerative disease who tried to take down a major publisher. It's a f***ing miracle to be standing here!
Then, of course, Alice, there was the Her Story, which was created pretty much entirely by one developer, Sam Barlow. That won the debut game mobile and handheld game. And the game innovation, I can't forget that. It was obviously the tense detective drama where the player watches videos of a murder suspect being interviewed by the police to kind of ascertain her guilt, but it's become a huge success despite being created on this tiny budget.
Great, so who else won?
So Rocket League, the online multiplayer sports game, was a big winner because it beat FIFA and LEGO Dimensions to the post in both the sports and the family category. That game obviously combines kind of football and motor racing, which I think is absolutely a bizarre but wonderful mix. The big esports audience award, obviously a big one for the night, that went to Smite.
Glad you picked up on esports there, because it was all part of a wider celebration this week, right?
Totally. It was the London Game Festival this week.
And they put a big focus on esports?
Yeah, the highlight of the week, which was made up of a series of summits, events, and kind of actually large gaming spectacles. There was like a massive Monopoly board in Trafalgar Square at the weekend. But it was the eSummit, the eSports Summit, that really kind of it focused around. It was led by Joe Swift, who's the chief executive of the UKI, or the UK Interactive Entertainment Industries Trade Body, which you can see why they try and make that a bit shorter. They were joined by Government Minister of Culture, Ed Vasey, as well, who, among other things, spoke about what's happening in France this week. They're actually considering laws to improve the chances of esports in the country, including actually defining gamers who play professionally as athletes, enshrining basically, like literally into law, a recognition of the level of ambition and dedication, and actually, you know, not to mention the time that it takes to train to become an esports professional. And he also had this interesting message about the EU.
One thing you might do, for example, is vote yes in the referendum to remain, so that we can continue to attract quality e-gamers from all over the 28 member states of the European Union. So that's one thing we can do for you, is to stay in the European Union.
So yeah, of course, a hot topic of debate in the wider sphere at the moment, but interesting because, as you probably well know, Alice, the games industry is huge, bigger than Hollywood, and has loads of dedicated fans. And indeed, one of the other speakers at the Esports Festival was Paralympian Mark Fussbrook, who made this fascinating point.
I was unfortunate just not to make the team for London. And I remember being sat on a golf buggy going around the park, and got talking to the person driving me. And they said, oh, it's fantastic wheelchair basketball. I loved it, it was amazing. I said, but it's such a shame that we only ever get to see it at the Paralympics. I said, well, you're not aware that there's, you know, a national league with four divisions and teams all over the country, and you can go, you know, most weekends and watch it, and it's pretty much free. And he didn't realise that. But there's a lot of sports, traditional sports out there that are a minority sports, and actually esports are in a far more advanced position in terms of the amount, the critical mass of people watching already and involved, the prize money and so on, that actually puts them and yourselves way ahead of those more minority sports. So, you know, I played a game at the weekend and maybe we had, you know, 6-7 people watching, and most of those were just friends and family.
And what that shows you is, for a Paralympian sport that only has like 7 people watching it, but it's still recognised, but then people on Twitch got hundreds and hundreds of thousands of watchers. So the esports and video gaming community, hugely influential, especially after David Cameron, the Prime Minister of the UK, made a massive appeal to young voters this week. They really could influence the referendum. What I also liked about Mark Fussbrook, if you bear with me for a second, is what he had to say about diversity in the industry.
Yeah, because I was going to say it was a big night for women at the BAFTAs as well.
Yeah, very much so. And at the Esports Summit, Joe Swift, the UKI chief executive, was very good at steering the conversation into like how esports has this huge chance to level the playing field in a way that normal sports just can't, because with, you know, diversity on screen, it literally doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman, black or white, or even with the thanks to, you know, the charity Special Effect, who we had on a previous show of Double Tap. Well, basically everyone has the same abilities when you get on screen, which included former pro gamer Annie Danu, Paralympian Mark Fussbrook, who we just heard from, Veronique Lallier from Hi-Res Studios, who was French, which is obviously interesting with all the stuff going on over there at the moment, and the MD of the hugely influential and massive group, the ESL, the Esports League. They made it kind of like really quite clear, and the conversation was very much focused on how esports will start shooting itself in the foot if, like some leagues across the world have done already, if we start to see more and more men and women leagues rather than just mixed.
And lastly, something that kind of caught my interest a bit was the e-games. So is that basically video gaming as an Olympic sport?
Not quite yet, but they are launching it at Rio alongside the Olympics, which I think is very clever. And the phrase national pride was bandied about a lot. It sounds a bit cliched to hear, but when you had the kind of, they had a Paralympian and Olympian, when that is all part of the bigger picture, it's certainly an interesting term for the industry. And I think it's you know, as going forward, just as kind of regular sports do, they're now going to have to start thinking about, you know, regularizations and standardizations to kind of prevent that kind of cheating and betting fraud and even doping. You know, we're not going to want to see a FIFA in the esports world. But I think it was, I mean, I've picked out a quote here as well. Chester King, CMO of the International E-Games Committee, said, and here's the quote, "We plan to take the very best practice from sports and bring it to competitive gaming. Our ambition is to bring credibility to the sector, dignity to the players, and inspiration to the spectators." All beautiful stuff. So I certainly think that it's one to watch, especially with old Team GB taking part alongside the USA, Canada, and Brazil. They're the only four countries taking part this year, but I think you're going to see more and more countries lining up. Probably France first in line, especially with their discussion in Parliament going on. It's anything to go by. And I think they're going to be literally fighting their way into this hugely successful growing sector in the games industry.
Great. Thanks very much, Jamie. And the London Gaming Festival isn't over yet. I'll be at EGX Res this weekend. Unfortunately, the tickets are sold out, so you'll have to join us next week for the lowdown from that. But do check out the games.london website in the meantime. So, what did music sound like in the Stone Age? That was the first question that Jason Graves had to get his head around when creating the soundtrack for Far Cry Primal. But composing for games, including this one, comes with many more interesting tasks and challenges. He sat down with me to talk about the process of games composing, his influences, and how he managed to create a realistic atmosphere for a saber-toothed tiger hunt.
Considering the biggest challenge really was, what did music sound like then? And since no one really knows, or it's little tiny bone flutes or something like that, we definitely, the audio team and I, felt like rhythm would be a great place to start. And then anything that didn't sound like it could naturally occur back in the day, we threw out. Everything was wood and skin and bone, and there was some clay, like, that was kind of clinky sounding, but no glass. It actually really gave the score a very round, kind of natural sound, which ended up working great, because when we put vocals in, then they sat up front really clear because they had a completely different timbre than everything else.
How much information do you get about the game before you compose?
Sometimes if I'm brought really early on, there's maybe concept art and a script and some basic ideas of gameplay. In the case of Far Cry, they were a lot further along. The whole game had a much more accelerated production timeline. So they did have some gameplay online, but it was fairly rough. And a lot of what I got, a lot of concept art. And then I was working on the game score as the gameplay was coming online. So every week, practically, I'd get new bits of gameplay, new quick time captures, new scripting events, and things like that. So they really kept me in the loop, and I didn't have to write blindly, which is always nice.
I know with Far Cry, you got to kind of compose not just for like the human characters, but they had a lot of animals as well, prehistoric animals. So what was that like to kind of compose themes around them?
Definitely the most straightforward and fun, because they didn't even need to send me any concept art. They did, but all they have to say is, you know, "You're hunting a saber-toothed tiger, go." And then they're like, "Oh, great." Before we came to the actual epic hunts, is what they were called, and I think there were either four or five specific ones for different animals, and those were a lot of fun, both because it was so big and beastly and sort of vicious, because they're supposed to be very angry until you tame them, of course, and then they're your awesome new best friends. But I was able to use this horn that literally is a ram's horn that my father brought back to me from Africa probably 10 or 15 years ago.
Wow.
And I never used it on anything because it sounds, you know, there's no real constant pitch. But that was the sound of the animals that I ended up using, musically speaking. I had a friend come over who plays trombone, and he played all this horn stuff. So when you look up any of the tracks on the soundtrack that have an animal in it, like a saber-toothed tiger or a mammoth or anything, you can hear that horn. It has a very, very distinct sound. And it was a lot of fun putting that in there because it just kind of made the track complete. It felt so, well, I mean, primal or primitive, you know, because it was just wild and uncontrollable.
We know there's games out now like Until Dawn, which you've composed for, that are very cinematic and very linear. And then, you know, Far Cry Primal is open world, so people can, you know, just go anywhere they want. So is it easier to compose for the more cinematic games or the open world games?
The neat thing about Primal was it was both open world and story driven, so the score was literally split into halves. And half of it, the first half I did, was the story mode, where you're assigned a task, there's something you need to do, and therefore we know the character is going to be going through these specific sets of circumstances, and I could score them the same way that I would score something like Until Dawn or Tomb Raider. It's a linear experience. Then with the open world version of the score, it was kind of new instruments and new, more epic sort of things, and even more granular music bits because it's open world, so there's really no specific way of knowing where the player is going to go. So we scored it from a geographic perspective, which is how I did Tomb Raider. As Lara's exploring the island, the music is assigned by where she is on the island, not the events that take place or the chronology of those events. And we did the same thing for the open world version of Far Cry. So when you're getting close to Isla territory, the music is shaded with the Isla sounds, which is Maluka, a Mexican singer doing some, like a female singer doing some chanting or breathy kind of vocals, and some scary Aztec death whistles and things like that. You pick up on these things. They start shading the music a little bit, and once you get into combat, it all goes full force. So it's sort of hinting at what's to come. Talking about kind of, you know, the differences within games, I mean, I suppose we should talk about as well what the difference is between composing for games and doing other sorts of scores, like, you know, for film or just for a performance. The technical difference is always what everyone wants to talk about, but I think the aesthetic difference is almost, well, equally as important, if not more important, because you have to write a lot of music for games. These big games, I mean, you're talking, let's talk about a film first. If you have a two-hour film, unless it's Star Wars, which has music, you know, and everything except maybe five scenes, most two-hour films, let's just say they have 90 minutes of score. So you've got a movie, average length movie, it's going to be about an hour and a half of music. A game, an average length, if it's a AAA title like Far Cry or Until Dawn, I think there was 8.5 hours of music in Far Cry, and closer to 12 in Until Dawn. So just the sheer amount of music that needs to be done is, and the way you deliver it, which is more the technical part, it's a big difference. Now, a lot of that is due to the aesthetics behind either games or kind of everything else. Because with film or TV, not the concert stage, because we're talking about just music then, but with narrative-driven stories like film or TV, the dialogue is always king. You don't step on the dialogue. You got to get out of the way of the dialogue. And you score the scene, but you don't play over the dialogue. And with games, it's mostly the opposite. There's dialogue in games, but the story is really music-driven. You'll have a cinematic or something that maybe a voiceover that explains what you're supposed to do, and then the character, the player, is doing something. And that's when the music sort of takes center stage. It's an interesting thing to think about, just the purpose of music really dictates everything else. You have film and TV sort of in the background, less is more, generally speaking, of course. And then with games, it's the opposite.
A big thank you to Jason Graves for the interview this week, and also Yuki, who was the key sponsor of the London Games Festival. Over the coming weeks, we'll be bringing you much more from the festival, including a look at the growing world of virtual reality. See you next week.
Double Tap is an Audio Boom production written and presented by Alice Taplin.